The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Stevie and Conan are here as usual on a Thursday with me. So the news is, lads, that Dermot Connolly has had his hearing at the Central's hearing committee two nights ago, and they upheld the decision that was put forward by the CCCC. Four C's, yes, exactly. And so that's where we are now. It's not a, the first one wasn't an appeal, he just had the hearing. So he got no joy out of that, so he's two more steps to go to. He can go to the Central Appeals Committee and see how they get on, and then he can go to the DRA, the Disputes Resolution Authority, and see how he gets on there. And we know last year he got he went right to the DRA and got off red card with Lee Keegan and used the defence of self-defence when there's no actual law of self-defence within the GAA rules. But like, I mean, you move when you go to the DRA and they're an independent body of lawyers that are completely independent of the GAA. You know, you're maybe opening it up to kind of like, I don't know, like criminal law or general public law that are completely different to the rules of the GAA. So like, I mean, the DRA was set up 10 years ago and it was set up for a reason, that there was players going to these high courts and stuff. Remember your man, the Westmead midfielder, I should remember his name because he bloody played against us in the Leinster final. He was sent off in the first round of the championship. He got his big suspension. He went to the high court and got back Rory O'Connell and got back for the Leinster final against us, had a bloody storming game, and it's outrageous. So the DRA was set up to not go to those high courts and stuff, to have it kind of a system in place for the GAA. But now people are going to, you know, to this and getting off. Dermot Connolly, I think, in his self-defence argument with Lee Keegan, said he was being choked on the ground. He won 2-1. There was three people there. So like, he's got the first one down as a failing, but he's two more to go to. Yeah. And like, I mean, if you're pulling in laws that are outside the scope of the GAA, who knows what he could get off on here.
Yeah. Listen, for a player who's been there and done it before, you'd have to ask the question, does he want to go through all of that again? Personally, I feel he was hard done by with the suspension initially, but he should maybe hold hands up at this stage and say, listen, I'm going to take my ban and move on with it, because at this stage it's starting maybe to disrupt his teammates in the Dublin panel as well.
Yeah, maybe it could be, and it could drag on for another little while. It's interesting, I was looking at this because we spoke a lot about this on Monday, so I don't want to get back into the whole incident and what happened and the ban and all that kind of thing, but it's this procedure in the GAA and these three different bodies that you can appeal to. So Sean Moran had a great piece in the Irish Times yesterday, and he crunched some numbers about, you know, they get a bad PR, the GAA, with these different bodies, you know, and there's so many you can appeal to, and you always get the feeling that lads get off all the time because these are the ones that go public. But yeah, the CCCC over the past 3 years proposed 467 penalties, right? More than three quarters of these were actually accepted without further process. So they're like, grand, I accept my red card, which I think most players, all players should do, unless they were accused in the wrong. Yeah. Unless there's an incident, look, I didn't do that. Mm. I have to appeal this to clear my name. I'm innocent of these charges. This is not always what happens, right? So then you're left with 111. So 111 of these cases out of the 467 decided to go ahead to the Central's hearing committee. 25 of them succeeded at that stage. So they got their hearing and they said, right, you are whatever, the referee got it wrong. Like, you have a look at Brendan Murphy, for example. Brendan Murphy got off, got his red card rescinded. He's okay for the qualifiers now on the grounds that his first yellow was not a yellow. And I completely agree with that. It was not a yellow. His second one was definitely a yellow and he was silly. His first one wasn't a yellow. So he went, he got his hearing. The hearing said, right, that was a case of a very harsh yellow, and we're rescinding that yellow, so you only got the one yellow. And that's what
that's fair enough.
So 25 of them succeeded. Of the remaining 86, 15 of those 86, so a lot of them said, right, we didn't get the hearing, we're giving up on it. But 15 says, we're not giving up on it, we're going further. So they went to the Central Central Appeals Committee, and just two of them won their appeal, right? So then of the 13 who failed, right? So 15 went, only two won, were successful. So of the 13 that failed, they went to the Disputes Resolution Authority. They went to the final one.
All of them went?
13 out of the 15, right? That went to Disputes Resolution Authority, and only one of those 13 were successful. So, like, the system is working in my eyes with those kind of stats, you know, like it's working to a certain degree. Like, I kind of thought anyone that goes to that DRA gets off, but that's not the reality.
Is there any examples in there of the 13 out of the 15? Because I would love to know how many of those 13 are high profile names.
But you see, this is the thing, they're not made public, and this was Sean Moran's argument in it, and he made a good argument that because some of these are leaked, and it was leaked that he's got, that Dear McConnelly's going, loads of these pass through the system and there's not a word about it.
Yeah.
So unless they're all made public and people know what's happening here, they used to be made public, but the reason they were stopped being made public was because it was argued that they could be prejudicial to the outcome of the trial. Like, again, bringing criminal law into the GAA, that's not going to happen. Like,
and you're right, because it's a completely different sport and criminal law should be different. I mean, the case last year when the self-defence McConnelly points Keegan, 2 years ago, I mean, it's not like he was down some back alley being choked and they had a act. There was a linesman watching him, miking to the referee. Killian O'Connor was there over the top of him. His life was not in danger. Plus, this is sport, okay? So when you go to the DRA, if Dear McConnelly goes to the DRA eventually now with this case, what's he going to say? What's the criminal law for pushing a linesman? I mean, it's completely different to real life.
Yeah, like, it's completely different.
They'll look at that and say, well, hang on, you were told if you push a linesman, you get 12 weeks. There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
There's not, like, and then, like, even like Stevie saying about it affecting the rest of the camp, it was up today up in Croke Park. Bernard Brogan was up and we were told, don't ask Bernard Brogan about Jim McConnelly. You know, this is like, you know, instead of him just giving some
That's understandable.
Well, like, you
know,
But that goes back to my point earlier on. Maybe it's a distraction for the teammates at this point and they don't want to be talking anymore
about it.
Add fuel to it.
Yeah, and they probably don't. They don't want to be talking about it. But it was interesting. I was talking to this to Dion here in the office earlier, and I was asking him about the FA, you know, in England, the football. In 2011, there's a stat, they had 473 cases that went to their appeals board and only two were successful. So while I'm saying that the GAA's one isn't as bad as I had thought, it's nowhere near as stringent as you go appeal something to this FA appeals board and there's a good chance you're wasting your time. And interestingly,
is there only one body that's looking after all
of you? Asking me questions like that, Stevie.
Have you really done your research? You are really trying to piss me off here.
That's twice you've asked me questions that I clearly don't have the answer to. But interestingly, there is a situation where with the FA, if you appeal and you're unsuccessful, you have the risk of having your suspension lengthened.
Oh, brilliant.
And that's the one thing we said on Monday. It's vital that this is brought in. And this will soften a lot of lads' coughs, because we see how many here have been unsuccessful with Sean Moran's numbers, that you won't be half as eager to go and waste these people's time and get your hearing. As it stands now, it's a shot to nothing. Yeah. You're losing nothing outside of, Stevie, you made the point of distracting your teammates, and I do take that point on board. But from your own point of view, you've nothing to lose. Let's just chance it. I want to play. Let's do it. But they need to bring in some sort of ruling that if you're unsuccessful, you're in bigger trouble. And that will, I genuinely think that will stop them. That will stop them all appealing. Now that we've covered that, on a lighter note, lads, did any of you read Dara O'Shea's piece in the Irish Times yesterday? It was outstanding.
Social media?
Yeah, and it's always outstanding, because Dara is a mischievous kind of, like, he's has unbelievable respect in the game, but he's also a bit of a messer as well. And it's great when you have a leader like that that also likes to have the bit of crack. And he does the piece with Malachy Clerken, who's obviously a brilliant writer as well. So the combination of the two of these lads together really makes their piece on a Wednesday enjoyable. But he's talking about social media now, and he's saying he's so glad that he's not playing the game at the, in this era of social media? Because remember, Stephen, we were playing, and the idea that, oh, I don't read the papers, and you might be true, might be like actually a fact that you don't read the papers, because like Dara was saying, there was only three big newspapers anyways.
Yeah.
So you just avoid a shop, you don't go in, and you're pretty much grand during the 90s or whatever. But now with Twitter and stuff, like he used Aidan O'Shea as the example, like if Aidan O'Shea says, right, I'm not reading the papers, there's a shitstorm going on about me, all he has to do is hit his Twitter app and see his mentions, and he's been like, how difficult it is for players to get away from this, like the idea that you don't read stuff about yourself, that day is gone.
It's totally gone, and there's no doubt players nowadays are totally scrutinised with everything that they do. But I would actually go back 10, 11, 12 years and say that GAA forms from they started, you know, they started to scrutinise players, and I was the victim of one of those forms at one stage. So it was where I was going through a bad spell with Armagh. I was still their leading scorer, but you know, I was
like the way you throw that in there.
Yeah, yeah. But there was a campaign or a topic put up. Is it time to drop Stephen McDonnell? And Benny Tierney always tells this story. I don't know if you've ever come across Benny on one of his social gatherings, but he always tells the story of this supporter from, I think he was from Cross MacGlen or Silverbridge, South Armagh anyway, and he was walking out of Cross MacGlen one day after me having a poor game, saying, he should be dropped this and he should be dropped that. The following week we play Westmeath and I scored 2-7, and Benny catches up with the same guy and said, well, what do you think of McDonald now? Should he be dropped now? And during this week, it's when all the campaign hit the forums. And Benny says to him, what do you think of McDonald now? Should he be dropped? Turn around, he says, sure isn't he a greedy bastard?
Well, these lads would say, oh, look, listen, the kick up the arse we gave him, they'll probably try and take credit for it. But that's interesting. How did you know about the forum? Did you search your name?
No, sure, everybody's talking about them. Every inter-county player says that they don't read them, but they do.
Have you googled your name?
No,
before?
Who hasn't?
No, you're a liar if you say.
Listen,
you
for the last 5-6 years of my inter-county career, I was reading the forum. So I always want to read what people are saying about me, good or bad, and I try to take the bad, you know, and learn from it, and you know, improve myself from it. But at the end of the day, what I came to realise deep down was these are guys who are sitting behind a keyboard. A lot of them are faceless. You know, they put fake names to their brand, and they don't come out. If they see you face to face, they're happy to stand and pose for photographs, you know, but not have the courage and the balls to say something to your face. And that's something that I realised later on in my career.
I thought it's always interesting on message boards, and I've looked on message boards, and genuinely about 90% of the stuff of me on message boards is not very nice for me to be reading this stuff.
90s?
But maybe a little bit higher than the 90s. Like, we could be right into it, but it's always that 10% that'll write something nice. And I think the 90% lads, these are losers down in their basement. I have this picture of these lads, and the 10% that say something nice, at least there's a few lads on here talking in this sense.
They're upstanding guys in society.
But Dara, just to get back to Dara, it was a brilliant piece, and he started talking then about Twitter bans and Twitter guidelines and how there was all this nonsense about Dublin, and they weren't tweeting about the Gooch when the Gooch retired, as if they're supposed to tweet about the Gooch. Like, I mean, all panels now have Twitter guidelines, and I'm not sure were they around when you were still playing, Stevie, but they're definitely, I know for a fact there was Twitter guidelines in Laois. I think it was 3 years ago, and Colin Begley got disciplined for this. Wait till you hear this. So the rule with the Laois guidelines was that you weren't allowed no GAA related tweets. Often often see with Gaelic footballers, you're watching a match on a Sunday, there's no one from any county ever gives their opinion on any game. Not allowed tweet about GAA. I would imagine this is a guideline in all of them. But Begley anyway got an operation in a hospital as a gas, and he was on the hospital bed with his leg in a cast or whatever, and he took, you know, these selfies, and he says, lay it up now for another 2 months before, but long road to recovery, hashtag whatever this is.
Never give up.
GAA related tweet, disciplined for that one. Can you believe? Yeah, he was.
Funny enough,
Flaherty disciplined him for tweeting because that's GAA related. That'll tell you how ridiculous it gets.
Colm has a habit of doing that. So he does, because the only ever Twitter ban that we were put on was under Anthony Toole with the international rules in 2011, and he had every reason to do so, and I'm glad that he'd done it. But we travelled down to Australia. He says, until we play our last test, nobody under any circumstances tweets anything at all. We were down in Australia, and Begley's tweeting away like mad. So he's the only one tweeting away like mad.
Oh, he was tweeting pictures of y'all on the beer, wasn't he?
I know, it was different afterwards, you know, but he was tweeting away like mad. He didn't seem to care what anyone was saying. But I can totally understand any manager, you know, at the height of a championship campaign or the height of international rules or whatever it may be, club championships, saying, listen, do not tweet anything that's going to come back and haunt you.
Yeah,
there's a point to be made there. Like, remember the Olympics last summer when Paddy Barnes and Michael Conlon were running around taking pictures of all celebrities, right, and yeah, athletes they were meeting and
having a bit of fun.
Yeah, and it's grand, it's all innocent, and they're not doing any harm, they're still training hard. But when they lose, all of a sudden everyone's like, well, they weren't wasting time taking a picture on
their
phone.
Sure, that's the thing. Listen, I've talked about this 101 times on the hurling show. Kilkenny, I've tried to get a Kilkenny player on the hurling show all year. Really like him, can't do it. Emailed the Kilkenny secretary 2 or 3 times. No, no, no. Even when they're back with the clubs, no, yeah, no, no. Now, Kilkenny lost at the weekend against Wexford. Did anyone say, well, that kind of army-style media ban didn't do them any favours, yeah, there should be treated like... Nobody ever paints that picture. But if Kilkenny were in the papers, they'd all say, oh, sure, they're in the... So when you lose and you're doing media, they all say, that's the reason. Yeah. But if you're on a really strict media ban where you can't even be an adult and decide your own... back what exactly to do, that's never used as a stick to beat the management with
it's
at
the
all.
Same with, it's the same with a team this week. They go out and lose a match, they're not fit enough. Not fit enough. It's always the excuse, they're not fit enough.
Well,
but
manager,
then the following week they go out and maybe win the match by 5 or 6. Jeez, they're much fitter than their opponents today, weren't they? You know, yeah, it's amazing the perception that people have. And it's the same with the Twitter bans and the media bans, whatever. You know, people will have their own opinion of everything anyway. So, you know, you're never going to change that.
Yeah, no, probably not. Come here, I just wanted to mention, now that we mentioned Dara O'Shea's piece every Wednesday, and it's really entertaining and really enjoy it and look forward to it. It's Jim McGuinness is in the Irish Times as well. So they've two huge names. But McGuinness's are just... They're just... In comparison to Dara, Dara's are puts a bit of personality into his. But the image McGuinness is trying to portray for himself is like you see it in the Sky ad. He's in the corridor of a like school or something reading a book. Like he's meant to be this guru and this, you know, philosopher on the game. And this is the kind of image he's putting out there of himself. Yeah. Like of this kind of fella who's on a higher tactical plane than everybody else. And you read his pieces. And I think he's overanalyzing some of the stuff that's in them. I think they read very difficult. It's not Keith Duggan's fault, I'd imagine. I think this is what Jim wants to put out there. And I know Jim. I've been good friends with Jim in the past. And I know Dara from social nights out. Jim and Dara are both great crack. His personality isn't really what he's selling himself as now. So it's clearly this kind of, it's clearly a conscious decision of selling himself in a certain way.
Yeah, he's certainly a fascinating character. So he is. Like yourself, I've come up against him many times.
Oh, I thought you said like yourself, fascinating character.
No.
Well, you are a fascinating character.
But in a different way.
Absolutely, in a different way. But Jim, obviously, you know, he's often spoke about in the past year in particular that he wants to get into soccer management, and maybe that's the persona that he wants to put out there now to try and get himself, and he's got every reason to do so, and I would love to see him as a soccer manager, because I think he would have the credentials to go and be successful in it. So I know he's doing his badges and all now, so maybe there's a reason behind it all, that's the image that he wants to portray of himself.
Yeah, no, it is, and there's no very little personality in it. I do agree, I think McGuinness as a manager could turn his hand to bloody anything, because a lot of management is... Why Jim is so brilliant is not this tactical guru, is that he's an incredibly, incredibly likeable man, and he's funny and he's warm and all those qualities a manager needs. Now, he has the other stuff as well, but like it's almost like he doesn't want to put any of himself into these pieces. He's all so dull and analytical and, you know, personality less.
Funny about soccer, I heard he's working on a kick-out strategy for soccer, genuinely, to try and get scored from it.
Yeah, I read that a few weeks ago as well.
Well, he could sign Cluxton then, couldn't he? Because he could have a transfer system.
Maybe, you know, when it comes to sport, like, you know, like how well, like, did you know him as a manager? Like, maybe he genuinely liked that. And, like, you know, how intense he was with Donegal and, like, you know, in training and on the sideline. Maybe he does think about it a lot more deeply when it comes to that sort of thing, and he gets sort of how serious it needs to be. Like, he did say something I didn't agree with, was about shared mental models or something about...
See, this old nonsense.
To me, that was just like, you know, it was nothing to do with psychology. That was just find the best player and let him kick the ball over the bar. But he said that was a whole psychological... master stroke, like, you know, when a team, like, I think it was Johnny Wilkinson, he used to point in 2003 Rugby World Cup. That was a shared mental model to get him on the ball. It was actually just a good tactic to get your best kicker.
Yeah, it's a drop goal to win the game. Yeah. Like, I mean,
he played such a huge psychological role with that Donegal team when he took them over. There's no doubt about it, because it was the same 15 players that had been playing for the previous couple of years and were getting nowhere. So mentally, he got inside their heads. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But you know, it's not always about getting inside a player's head as well as about having the skillful players on the pitch as well to play to your strengths. And he I suppose formed a system of play that suited those particular players as well.
Yeah, no doubt he did. Right, up next we'll do some analysis on the matches at the weekend.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. And it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show it didn't look great, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible and unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, back in club and county.
Right lads, first up we're going to talk about Tyrone Donegal, and based on last year's Ulster final, we're not expecting a classic here at all. Depends if you're a football hipster and you like these cagey games like Conan kind of does up in Ulster.
I'll take it from here.
We know this is going to be close, we know it's going to be competitive, we know it's going to be intense. That's all we know. It's not going to be high scoring. And Mickey Hart says, look, pretty much admitted that during the week. It's not going to be high scoring. They're two conservative teams, and they know, the problem is they both know they're both going to be defensive, and they don't want to be the one to go, let's try a little something here and get caught. So we know what we're going to see here. Yeah. We're going to see a lot of men behind the ball defending. Then we're going to see cagey kind of counter-attacks, not the free-flowing counter-attacks that they might use against another team. We'll see them sending three or four players up, try to get us a score, get us a free, and that's kind of the way this is going to work out.
Yeah, but the manager, who's probably the bravest and tells his team to go and counter-attack at will, might be the one that'll come out on top in the end, you know. And it's certainly going to be, you know, a fascinating battle on the sidelines between Rory Gallagher and Mickey Hart. You know, Mickey Hart had the upper hand last year in the Ulster Championship.
See, did he though? Because, like, I mean, I don't think it was anything Mickey Hart did that Tyrone kind of, with a minute to go, Donegal were a point up, and the whole narrative changed because Sean Kavanagh and Peter Hart had two moments of magic. You know, tactically, I don't think.
But for me, Mickey Hart had the upper hand because his team won. It's quite simple.
But should that write the script though? Should it? Just because, you know, like, I mean.
Well, listen, it was nip and tuck the whole way. Yeah. You know, a point up for Donegal with a minute left doesn't mean that Rory Gallagher had the upper hand. For me, the manager who comes out on the winning side certainly has the upper hand. And that might be a piece of brilliance, like we've seen with Peter Hart's fantastic long range point at the end. Sean Kavanagh's point just afterwards. It might be that there, but it could be the case that Mickey Hart had total trust and confidence in his players to go and do that towards the end of the game when it had to be done. It'll be certainly a fascinating battle, as we say. You know, there's no doubt about it. Donegal are going to go in defensive. Tyrone are going to go in defensive. And will they throw caution to the wind? Will either manager say to their players, you know what, we're going to hit Donegal, or we're going to hit Tyrone with the unexpected here and really attack them, counter-attack them at a... But you never know. You just never know.
Yeah.
One manager might be brave enough to say, this is the way we're going to do it. I don't expect that it is going to happen, though. I do expect both will be playing the cautious game. And, you know, as you say, it could come down to free kicks in the end and who has the best free taker on the pitch. The best free taker on the pitch on this weekend will be Michael Murphy.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
And he has the ability to kick them over from 60 yards out. So it could be a case that he could be the match winner, but I'm not moving away from my prediction of Tyrone winning Ulster this year. I still think, man for man, that they are the best overall team out there.
Right. The thing about last year's Ulster final was Donegal were the dominant team, I thought, for maybe 60 of the 70 minutes. And then the youthful fitness, and we know Tyrone have incredible heart and never say die attitude, the younger legs told in the last 10 minutes. Now, Donegal have rectified that to a certain extent, and they have a lot of youth within their team now. So the idea that the last 10 minutes, Tyrone's youth and vigour will overrun Donegal, that's gone now. So it actually makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, and I don't think Donegal worry about Tyrone. I mean, like, they've played 5 times in the last 6 years. Donegal have won 4, and they'll probably think that they should have won last year, but now it is a completely different team. Makes them a bit of an unknown quantity, but I think if anybody's designed to break this Tyrone defence, it's Donegal. I mean, albeit it's against Antrim, but Antrim had everybody back. But you can see the way Donegal play, they don't fear that. Like, all these underage teams have grown up now playing in this system, playing against these systems. So Donegal are better set than anybody. They've literally written the book on how to play this game. Like, so you can see even the like of Jamie Brennan for his goal, just bang, just going straight at men. There's a boy, Cian Mulligan, came in instead of Paddy McBrearty, just taking men on. They're going at two bodies, and that's where Derry completely failed against Tyrone. I don't know what they were expecting, but Tyrone had men back. Some of them were absolutely knackered. Like, they were gassed, and Derry would not go at them. Like, you could see, I think once they Sean Kevin had just dragged himself back because they had to be inside the 45. But if anybody needed to get at anybody, he was the man to target. But, like, Derry weren't thinking, let's run at somebody. Whereas Donegal go at them. But then somehow, when Antrim tried to catch him on the break, they always had extra men in defence. So I think Rory Gallagher's strength is that he is going to allow people to maybe risk losing the ball because they'll still have enough men back. So they'll have them going straight at them, seeing what happens. And then he brings on Mark McHugh, Paddy McBrearty, Carl Lacey, and they all combine for the last goal.
Yeah, Owen McHugh as well. Their bench now looks an awful lot. Now, because they've all these new young faces, now they have a much stronger bench.
So this is the strength of Donegal. I actually thought Tyrone were going to win, but now I'm looking at it and I can't believe that Tyrone are favourites. If I was a bookie, I would just have it evens because I couldn't call this one, and I genuinely think Donegal, if anybody, are the team to beat Tyrone.
Yeah, there's no way this weekend though that Paddy McBrearty is going to be starting on the bench. I can't see it.
The interesting thing with Paddy McBrearty, lads, right, is that the last time he started a game for Donegal was the 12th of February. Like, he hasn't started any game since picking up an injury against Roscommon on February the 12th. But he's been back since then, and he hasn't started again. Like, so I'm starting to wonder, is this a tactic from Gallagher? It's not a tactic I would use, certainly not.
Well, when you look back at last year's campaign, he was their most outstanding forward, so he was in the league and championship, and he was the go-to guy to get the scores. He's serious strength for such a young fella, you know, very powerful on the turn and direct at going at defenders. And you know, Rory Gallagher's probably thinking in the lines of, right, we want somebody to come into the game and have a serious impact on it, and Paddy McBrearty would certainly do that. But you start your best players. Paddy McBrearty is one of Donegal's best players, one of the best corner forwards in the country. You have to start him.
Yeah, you definitely have to start him. But Donegal, you mentioned Donegal's record, Conan, against Tyrone, and since Mickey Hart took over, it's 5-2 to Donegal, which is an incredible stat considering how dominant Tyrone have been against most teams, Stevie.
Yeah, but I would go as far back, you know, in the noughties when Tyrone were the best team in the country, and Donegal still, for some reason, had an ability to beat them.
Could beat them the odd time. And Donegal have been in the last seven, or no, this Sunday is their 7th Ulster final in a row. Now,
Semi-final.
They've been in the last six
this is
finals.
Semi-final.
Or this is a semi-final. They're trying to get into the final. Yeah. If they win, they'll be in a final for the 7th time in a row. They've won 3 and they've lost 3 so far. So, like, I mean, it's not the greatest record, but the consistency they've had over that period is incredible. And now they have a new team, and Rory Gallagher is trying to transition the new team, and everyone thought that there were no hopers, and suddenly they're coming in with a great chance of beating Tyrone with a new team. So it's an incredible journey that they have been on, and now they're look like they could continue it on with a completely new team.
Tell you what else, they have Hugh McFadden, Kieran Thompson, Michael Murphy. They've got a long range threat as well if they want it. Like, so it's going to be really interesting, not to get scientific with your wind talk again, Willie, but like, you know, if there is a big wind, What way are Tyrone going to set up? Because Donegal will just stroke balls over from 55 yards out. And this is what would make me really worried if I was a Tyrone fan, because these lads can kick it from far. But if they come out too far, Tyrone, these lads will hit space like nothing normal. And they've got Frank McGlynn and the rest of them sort of coming behind them as well. Like, it's almost like, you know, they're ready for this assault. Yeah.
The one thing in that could go against Donegal is Donegal or this new team of Donegal are improving at championship football. Now, I know from experience, if you target the league and you train hard for the league and you treat league games as, you know, the be all and end all, you will win league games. We beat you in 2003, Stevie. We beat you in 2002 in two league semi-finals. Because they were like our first round of championship where you were just floating along. Look, if whatever we do, we do. So we don't know how much Donegal have targeted this league. Were they treating them like championship games because of a new team and they wanted, you know, we know what we'll get. We know what Tyrone's team will bring on Sunday.
Yeah.
We're not 100% sure. Antrim was so easy. They're a Division 4 team now. We're not 100% sure what this Donegal team has in championship action against the team of the likes of
Tyrone. Exactly. Well, let me assure you, Wally, we went out in 2002 and 2003 to beat Laois.
Ah, that's so great to hear,
so
isn't it?
You were the better team on the day, and I'll be open and honest about it now. We certainly were treating that as the first round for us as well.
Really? So, would you have been taking those seriously?
Absolutely. Listen, we were a team at that stage we were trying to make the breakthrough, and we never won national leagues before 2005, so why would we not push to win as many competitions as possible? And certainly we went out with the attitude and the opinion to go and beat Laois, and on the day you were just too good for us. So
yeah.
You know, it was a different story obviously when it came to the championship, but we did have the upper hand, but they were always tight games anyway. But looking at Donegal in the league campaign this year, I can only base it on my own personal experience. I've never gone out in any match, league or championship, to get beat or not to underperform. So, you know, Rory Gallagher has trusted a lot of his younger players to go out and perform this year, and they've done that, and they've been fantastic in doing that, and they've retained their status in Division 1, and they've actually, up until the last day, could have gone to a final. So, you know, they performed exceptionally well when you compare the leaders and the quality of players that actually retired. And that's probably why we were looking at them at the start of the league saying, no, these guys can't come in and compete. And Alan Hansen, as we all know, was one of the most famous quotes ever, that you can't win anything with kids. But Rory Gallagher has proven that, you know, in Gaelic games as well, you know, you can certainly put kids out there and throw caution to the wind and compete with teams that are perceived to be above you. But you know, they weren't tested really and truly again in the Antrim game, so this will be their first real tough test in championship football this year, and it'll be interesting to see, can the young players cope with the demands of championship football, intense Ulster championship football against one of the best teams that's out there.
The thing about this rivalry as well is there's a right bit of hatred in this rivalry. Like, there's some trash talking goes on. There's some rows in the last couple of championship games. It looks nasty to me. Like, and I see Monaghan playing Donegal, and it's a rivalry, but it's not a nasty rivalry. It's like with Tyrone and Yee got a little bit nasty. Like, I mean, there's hate. How important is that coming into a game, and how much, you know, kind of focus do you need to put on what's going to be going on off the ball?
That nasty rivalry is a good thing for a player. So it is a good thing for any team. And you know, I would say this weekend we certainly will see heated incidents, and you'd expect that from Donegal and Tyrone. But from a player's point of view, they're going to be expecting that, and they will have been expecting it from the championship draw was made, and they'll be looking forward to it. But you know, at the end of the day, what a player has to do is forget about any incidents that may occur. They will occur. They have to have themselves mentally ready for it, but they have to go out and try to perform and play the football and play to the system that their manager sends them out to play first and foremost.
I'd always love to be in the Tyrone camp building up these. Well, I'd be biased as a Derry man, but it always seems to me that they're always involved in this sort of thing. But do you know yourself, when you're going to play a team like that, and it's really annoying when you hear a manager say, no, you know what they're going to do, they're going to do this and they're going to do that, they're going to hit you, they're going to be in your ear. I never ever heard it the other way, like, you know, let's get under these boys, like, let's see what they're made of.
That's a very interesting point, because you always hear Mickey Hart comes out and says, I certainly don't encourage any of that, and I believe him.
Yeah.
Now, I know Joe Brawley doesn't believe him or other people, I believe Mickey Hart doesn't do that, but I think Ryan McManaman inspired a generation of, he's a cult hero because of his trash talking, and we had him on the show, and like, Ryan's a likeable fella and he talks a bit of banter, you know, that's what he calls it. He's an icon in Tyrone football, and he's an icon because of that stuff, and all these lads came up seeing him. I think this is driven by players themselves. Mickey doesn't discipline him further, which he should, but I don't think he encourages this stuff.
Should he? Like,
no, I wouldn't discipline him either, because if he's getting results from these players going out and doing what they naturally do, then so be it. You know, there's no, I don't believe that Mickey Hart sends his players out to do it. There's players that are just like that. We have one of our own, Ciarán McKeever, was exactly like that. I go back to the early years of his inter-county career at senior level when he was tasked with marking Benny Coulter, and he absolutely tortured Benny the first couple of times. And Benny despised Ciarán, there's no doubt about it. He absolutely despised him until he came to play with him at the international rules and realised that Ciarán is not this animal that he was facing on the football pitch. He was a totally different character, and that's just the way it is. Sometimes when a player pulls on that jersey, he turns into a different animal, and that's what I love to see. You know, I love to see somebody turning into something else that you don't expect of them as well.
And it's weird, and then Benny will be saying to Ciarán, here, do that to your man, the thing you do to me, do that to the Australian. You know what I mean? You want these fellas on your side when they're with you. Like,
listen,
I mean,
every successful team needs two or three of those guys to get under the skin of their opponents, and certainly Throne have more than enough of them.
The only thing is, Throne have a lot of big men in their team. That's probably where Donegal, like, they need a big game from Michael Murphy, and the young lads need to be ready for the like of Justin McMahon and whoever else it is, like Ronan McNabb or whoever's coming and talking in your ear. Like, they need to be ready for that.
I think Donegal are just leaving one inside now, right? Because Murphy plays full time in midfield now, right? So they're leaving one inside. And I always think against Tyrone, that's the right thing to do, because Tyrone play two sweepers, so they'll have two lads covering two. So your two in there are kind of useless anyway. Yeah. So play one in there and have one extra body around the middle third to break through the lines and stuff. So
and as Conan says, you know, they have the ability to kick long range points. So if they can,
out there.
If Tyrone do play two men in there with Donegal's one, you know, that should free a spur Donegal man up for an extra long
range. And if Donegal are brave enough to bring their extra man up a little bit and make sure you have your three shooters and play it around a bit and get it to these three lads and go for the long range scores, I think that's the tactic Donegal
would
probably...
Murphy's role, won't it? Like, he'll be
Murphy and Thompson, you'd imagine they should be... Like, if there's a strategy for this, keep them on either side of the field or good side and work it around until they get that pocket of space and take a go. Yeah. Now, you don't kick long range scores on a regular basis, but they'll get a few and it will be a low scoring game. But it's interesting, Sean Kavanagh was interviewed during the week, lads, and I don't know if does Sean listen to the show. He's been on the show, you did an interview with him.
He listens.
Maybe he does listen, but he was I don't think people have read us right. We're not just the way they believe we are. They think we're a team that can only play a certain way. I believe we've much more flexibility than that, and I imagine it will come to the fore at some point. So that's a criticism we've had of the show, certainly I have had it in the show, is that Tyrone are very one dimensional, as in we know they're hard runners, they're a great counter attacking team, but they don't seem to have any other way of playing. Sean's saying they do. I don't think we'll see it on Sunday, but he says, okay, this trick is up their sleeve come the championship. I'm not sure what this could be given the players that they have.
They've got quality throughout their pitch, you know, and they've got quality to call from on the bench as well. Whether or not Mickey Hart allows those players to go and express himself, you know, you go back to Lee Brennan and what he scored for his club team about a month ago.
He has to start, lads. I don't care. I'm starting a campaign for him. I know it's only one clip, and like Joey Barton says, Neymar looks like an unbelievable player on YouTube or something.
He scored two against Derry, two good points as well.
Yeah, he did. Well, one from play, and it was similar to the points he scored in that YouTube clip actually, there where he solos it on the left to put it. He just looks like he has everything.
We've been watching this boy for years.
I could watch that man all day.
He is quality, and you know, you're expecting a player that can freely score like him to be allowed to go out and play and express himself and be given a jersey, you know. So maybe Sean Kavanagh is thinking of the likes of Lee Brennan when he's thinking that way as well, and seeing him night after night in training sessions and seeing what he can really do, you know. Lee Brennan, I've been fortunate enough to see him over the last couple of years, having been involved with under 21s with Armagh and coming up against their own, but you know, he's been knocking on the door. He's a fantastic young talent, but they've got many young players, you know, Sludden, McGeary, quality, Myler, you know, all quality players coming through that believe in themselves, that are natural winners. And, you know, they believe, this is the Tyrone mentality, they believe that they are better than every other county, and that's a simple fact of it. You know, that their psyche is totally different than a lot of counties, and they will come into this game going, you know, people have this perception that we can't play a counter-attacking football. People have this perception that we are only a dogged, dour team that can defend only. We'll show them. And that's the attitude that they'll have.
Yeah, okay, Red. So that's loads of stuff on that game. That's going to be a really good one. Okay, not quality-wise, but at least a good contest.
Maybe the best game of the year yet.
It won't, lads, let's be honest. If we're any sort of analysts, we're going to call this as a low scoring dour game, and that's just the reality of it. Right, Kildare and Meath into Leinster, which is going to save the whole weekend. Jeez. Lads, this is live on Sky, so no one's going to be watching it, unfortunately. But this is Kildare versus Meath, the home of football in Leinster, two ex-traditional teams that were good How long ago? Before the Dublin dominance in the 90s, we had All-Ireland contenders with Meath and Kildare. Now we're looking at two teams trying to break through kind of up and coming teams. So now we're looking at what I want to talk about in this, lads. They've obviously shot the lights out. They both scored 11 goals in the league. They both had huge wins in their last game. Kildare scored 121 against Laois. They had 11 of their starting 15 scored against Laois, lads. That's a serious stat. There's only four fellas that didn't score, which is unreal. Meade scored 27 points against Loud, which is an incredible shooting to kick 27 scores in any game against a team like Loud who have gone up to Division 2. So we're looking at a really, really attacking game, I think, here. We're looking at a high-scoring game. The midfield battle is very interesting. We talked to Kevin Feely on the show lots of times. We've done a good bit on Kildare, and we know he forms a really strong partnership with Tommy Mulick. Every single one of their kickouts, Eamon O'Donoghue in the Irish Times crunches the numbers today, and it's a really good piece if you get a chance, but he does a lot of analytics on this. Kildare won every single one of their kickouts against Laois. Isn't that a fair old stat?
That's a remarkable stat in the current game, absolutely.
Really is, yeah. And this is not, Feely had two marks in the game. This is not tapping into the corner yeah. back. This, like, because it's easy to win them all then, because sometimes these kickout stats are skewed. Mulick and Feely were winning them, like, which is unreal. So they're strong. Meade, in contrast, they kicked six, or in the first half against Loud, Meade kicked six of their seven restarts long, and they won just 50% of them. So Meade are going straight and long down the middle to their midfield. Kildare like hitting their midfield. So immediately, lads, we're looking at an open game here, because you're hitting midfield with your kickouts. There's no opportunity to be falling back, and you know.
If you've got a goalkeeper like Paddy O'Rourke who's got maybe 100 yards of a kick, you use that. You know, you try to get the ball as far up the pitch as possible. Why waste the time and go short with kickouts like that there when you've got such a long kicker?
Well, McEnany knows that, because actually he, in 75% of his kickouts, he went long and central.
Yeah. So, you know, that's if Meath happened to win those kickouts, that's cutting out, you know, an extra one or two kick passes from the fans to attack. But certainly Kildare's stat, that's the most impressive stat that I've heard actually this year. It's unheard of nowadays in the current game that a team actually goes and wins 100% of their own kickouts. The way kickouts are devised and worked on nowadays, you know, so you have to give a lot of credit to Feely and Mulick in the Kildare midfield as well, that they are competing and being strong in around the middle third of that pitch and going and winning those kickouts as well.
Yeah, and then you have Ronan Jones, who's new for Meade in midfield, and he's in with Brian Menton, who we know from previous years. But Jones was interesting. He had 22 possessions against Loud, and on 10 of those 22, he carried the ball and took on his man for a midfielder. Let's see. There's none of this backwards. You're taking on your man. You're going for it.
Yeah.
Then you've Graham Riley coming in towards the midfield. He's going for it. So Meade are running hard and direct running, and they've a dangerous full forward line. So I'm making a prediction here, lads. This could be a classic, and it's a disappointment that it is on Sky, because like the numbers of the hurling, Clare and Limerick were terrible, so people aren't getting to watch this game. But this could be the game of the weekend. I'm actually at a wedding down in Kerry at the weekend, so I'm not going to get to go to this game, but I would advise people to go to watch this game. I'd say the betting must be 50-50, and two really attacking teams with good solid midfields, long kickouts going to midfield. You know, we'll see a throwback maybe.
Well, we would like to think that'll be an open and flowing game of football when both teams have scored 11 goals in the league, and given the fact that they put up massive scores in their last championship games, you would hope that this will be a fascinating encounter. You know, when you're talking about stats and the Kildare kickouts, what type of stats does Graham Riley possess for a scoring half forward?
It's
amazing. It's amazing, you know, the way the game has gone. The amount of scores that he gets from play from half forward is ridiculous, and consistently over the last 5-6 years.
The danger with Graham Riley is, lads, because he's been picked in the corner here, but he's playing the half forward line, is the half forward lines have changed. The scoring half forwards are gone, so Graham Riley's had to battle through an era of wing forwards having to work, and Graham Riley stuck true to his principles. And Graham Riley is a man who in general will want his midfielder on top, you're in big trouble with Graham Riley, because he'll just lurk and lurk, and then he's gone and it's over the bar. He's always waiting on the shoulder for a pass.
He's got a great turn of pace as well to go and take his man on, and he's got the confidence to take his man on. And if he's doing that there as well as Jones from midfield, then you know that's going to cause headaches for the Kildare back defence.
Yeah, they have a lot of pace in their forward line. Like McMahon and Lenihan are fast. Wallace is an ex-runner. And like O'Sullivan's a small, stocky kind of, you know, robust centre-half forward. So Meath are dangerous too. It's interesting who Kildare will put on Graham Riley, actually, because Ollie Lyons could do that job speed-wise. Keith Cribben would have the engine kind of, you know, to stay with him as well. So I would imagine Ollie Lyons would do that job. But Ollie Lyons could have his hands full with the Meath full forward line anyways, because they're tricky enough. So who they put on Graham Riley would be, you know, would be a big decision.
It's not like, do you take a risk and try and put him on the back foot? I mean, like, what Riley's doing is incredible, because we had Keelan Mooney on last week. Sorry, Stevie. But he came from down and he was talking about going back to halfback, where it's actually a bit more attacking than half forward, because you have to make two runs from half forward to get back up the pitch again, whereas you're half back, you launch from that platform. So what Riley's doing is, it is a joke, like scoring 7 points from play from half forward whilst keeping an eye on a half back who always wants to go forward.
What would you do?
Like, would you put someone on to try and put him on the back foot, or you just man mark him?
I think Riley would prefer to be man. When I played wing forward, and I didn't play there enough, because I really enjoyed it, but I was put into full forward line and then back out, and I only got maybe a year of a run at wing forward, when I would have loved more. But I always preferred to be man marked than have a lad attacking. There's nothing I hated more than having a responsibility, because by the time you went back up, you were thrown off your game. So I'd say, if you asked 10 wing forwards, would they prefer to be marked on the half back line, or would they prefer to mark an attacking wing back, 9 out of 10 would say I'd rather be marked.
Absolutely. But the impressive thing about Graham Riley is, as well, it's not just a case of being lined out at 10 or 12 and him staying in those positions. His movement along the half forward line is impressive as well, and you know, his range of scores, he can score from close in, he can score from far out, and he can take a man on at blistering pace as well. So you know, it's the quality that he possesses that makes a defender really think about their game and how to mark him as well.
He's incredibly accurate. Yeah. And he's incredibly accurate at flicking it over without losing a stride. And he solos the ball as fast as he runs without the ball. He just has all those things for a ball carrier should have. Yeah. And then running at the goals, just a flick. Just flicks it and it's over the bar. And he rarely misses when he's on the run like that. Very rarely. I saw him actually, first time I saw Graham Riley was in Croke Park. He gave Colin Begley an awful roast, and I think he hit him for five. It was Begley's
first.
We are fairly picking on Colin Begley.
Poor old Beggs, yeah. But it was Beggs' first year back. I think it could have been 2008. It could have been Graham Riley's debut season. I'd never seen him before, and I was like, who is this fella? Like, he's a speed demon and he can score. But he's been consistently good ever since.
Yeah, and like, Kildare, I mean, both teams are like almost are playing in a different era. And like, you know, Kildare are almost like a textbook team where it's, you know, they kick the ball into midfield, catch the ball, kick the ball to the full forward, lay it off to the half forward. It's just anything you could ever write that you want the GA team to do, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly how I was coached when I was young. And this is why, this is all this, the way the game's moving, lads. Just, I don't like it.
It's
I don't
a lesser like championship it. For you.
Right, we'll be back in a second with some predictions and one tweet for Stevie.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey at football.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Meath at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brodie on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
All right, questions from Twitter, lads. I have to say, this week the questions from Twitter were absolutely shite, so you're going to have to up your game, or else you're going to have to forget about giving
you... A bit of honesty there, Willie.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is. There's only one worth using, so sorry to anyone that actually wrote them, but look, they're not of the standard I want on the show. So, Stevie, this one's from Peter Tumulty. Strange, isn't it?
Tumulty.
Tumulty, you know him, so
no,
do you?
No, I know the name.
All right, okay. I didn't never heard of the name before. So he says, when is Stevie McDonald coming back to tell us about the Armagh forwards? So you thought you were getting away with this one.
And tell
Stevie.
Me that. What's good about that tweet?
We want to know. We want to know about your analysis about this great Armagh forward line that turned out to be absolute headless chicken Armagh forward line.
Right. Well, put it like this. First of all, I'm going to give credit to the Down defence, especially in the first 10 minutes of the match. I think they had the upper hand on the Armagh attack. But if Armagh were as ruthless as they had been throughout the National League in the 25 minutes from 10 minutes until half time of that particular match, they would have been 5-6 points up at half time.
This isn't Division 3 now, Stevie.
Hang on a second.
You got carried away. You got carried away with your own county. It happens to everyone, Stevie.
Let's be totally honest here, okay? I will hold my hand up and say it. The Armagh forward line failed to deliver, absolutely. But they cut the down defence to shreds without being clinical at the same time during that 25 minute spell. So they weren't clinical in front of goals.
But they had strong wind now in the their shot selection against the wind, they were pitiful.
Absolutely. I have watched the game again since, and watching their body language, even their attempts for points in the first half, it didn't look as if they had much confidence in their conviction with the shot. There was no doubt about it. They underperformed, and for me, the losing in the game was definitely the Armagh attack. You know, that was the losing in the game. Now, maybe we expected too much from such a young group of players. You know, Jamie Clark ultimately is the oldest player in the Armagh attack. So, you know, were we demanding and expecting that these bunch of players were going to come in and demoralise the down defence over the course of 70 minutes? I'm not so sure. Reading Benny Coulter's article last week, Down have three of the best defenders in the country playing in their defence, which I didn't realise. So I think Benny kind of got carried away with the article, but
we all get carried away for our own county.
Oh, we do absolutely. But what I'm saying is, you know, I don't expect the likes of Anoisin O'Neill to be as bad again. You know, he's a fantastic player. I don't expect the likes of Rory Grogan to be as bad again.
They were the big letdowns, because I knew about the three in the full forward line, but the O'Neill and Grogan were the two that I was most disappointed with.
And Rory Grogan has developed into a fantastic player, but Dara O'Hanlon was marking him, and he got really good under the skin of Rory Grogan, and you could see that affected him. Anoisin O'Neill was well marked by Colin McGovern. You know, so Down had their man-to-man parents done off fantastically well. I thought Darren O'Hagan was exceptionally good in the first half against Jamie Clark, but then watching the game again last week, Jamie Clark played a deeper role and set up some fantastic opportunities for the Armagh attack. I would still prefer to see Jamie Clark inside. Darren O'Hagan still, for me though, was one of the best players in the pitch that day. You have to give credit to the down defence, so you do, but at the same time, Armagh totally underperformed in that department, and they know that, and they are hurting from that. And I don't expect the Armagh forward line to be as poor again.
Right, well, let's hope not. Right, well, to move on here, because the Twitter questions were shite, we'll bring you a little bonus here, Conan, because you were at the Super Value Behind the Ball campaign today, and tell us who you're talking to.
Yeah, I went up to Croke Park. I met Footballer of the Year Lee Keegan, and I started by asking him what he makes of playing centre-back.
There's a bit more, I suppose, holding in the territory with it. Obviously, you have a bit more licence with number 5 or 7. I played full-back last year too, so it's something that I'm used to, I suppose, you know, doing either man-marking or trying to hold a position there for Mayo. To be honest, I'm just happy to play in whatever way or capacity I can be able to. Obviously, we have the likes of Cullen Boyle there, Paddy Durkin, Donny Vaughan, you know, Stevie Coe, and a lot of these lads are able to play anywhere in the halfback line, so it's great competition to have there. So you have to be on your toes and train, because you know, Steve Roach is not afraid to change it up, which is great for us, because if we're not playing well, we're not going to get picked, and that's the reality. Whether you have four All-Stars or no All-Stars, or you've won this or that, so that's the way it has to be. You have to bring that kind of, I suppose, that you have to bring that kind of energy to train and to get picked, and it's good, and it's great to have these young guys pushing us on, you know, not that we're old, but like we've been around a while, so it's good to have that fresh impetus. But no, I don't mind number 6. As I said, I'm just happy to be in the halfback any way I can, and the only time I try to, I suppose, get forward is a bonus, but obviously my primary role is defensive, and I'll try and keep it that way.
I was going to say though, do you find it a little bit frustrating maybe you have to hold sometimes when you could just be bursting forward again, like everyone knows you can?
Yeah, of course, and that's, you know, that's the fun part of the game, but I suppose going forward and having that license to go forward is good. But I think a lot of teams are kind of capping on to, I suppose, the power of halfback lines within each county at the moment, and it is a critical line now at the moment, because it sets up a lot of attacks, and actually it finished with a lot of attacks too. The halfback ends up getting more scores than probably some of the forwards, like, so but no, it's something we have to adapt to. Of course I love getting forward as much as possible, but the reality is it's at the other end we need to be stopping, I suppose, goal chances or points.
That's interesting with Lee Keegan, lads, talking about playing centre-back, because my idea of Lee Keegan, and Conan, you're right asking about having to hold, and this is, like, it's a criticism of Rochford, but can we really criticise Rochford when he got Player of the Year last year? Because he moved him into full-back last year, you know, now he played a leader's part. Now he's in at centre-back, and it's almost like Rochford is trying to play Lee Keegan everywhere bar the best position that he's had leading up to that. So what's Rochford seeing that we're not?
Well, when you've got a player of Lee Keegan's quality, you try to put him everywhere on the pitch, don't you?
He's not a centre back though, Stevie.
No. I would love to see him playing at number 5 or number 7 and driving up the pitch, you know, and getting scores, because he's a quality wing halfback. He's the best wing halfback in the country, let's be honest. You know, and you certainly play players, you know, it's like us when we had Aaron Kiernan playing for Armagh. You don't move Aaron Kiernan from number 5 into number 6, because that's not his best position. He's a great attacking option for a wing halfback, and he can defend as well. So play him in his best position.
And you know, the danger of what happened there as well is that Shane Walsh was in centre forward and he's having to mark Shane Walsh. Now usually Lee Keegan would do to Shane Walsh what he'd do to Dear McConnelly and put him on the back foot, like we talked about earlier on, and say, look, I'm going to attack, and Shane Walsh is following him. But a centre back, he has to hold it a bit more. So he finds himself having to mark Shane Walsh a bit more. And Shane Walsh is a speed demon and he burned him a few times. So you're actually taking Lee Keegan's main power away from him, as in he's going to put his man on the back foot because he has to hold. And Lee Keegan's just all a mess there.
Yeah, and when he's man marking someone like Shane Walsh, it leaves a big gap then as well at centre back.
Pulling him out of the centre.
It's almost what they're doing with Aidan O'Shea as well. It's like, well, Aidan O'Shea can take men on, Aidan O'Shea can catch the ball, Aidan O'Shea can play midfield. So let's try and play him everywhere instead of just deciding, we'll play him there. Instead of just deciding, play Lee Keegan wing halfback. He's good at everything, yes, but he's better out here.
Well, they're playing Aidan O'Shea in subs at the minute. So.
Well, there's talk he has a groin injury. But just on that quickly before we move on, I was an all-rounder when I was playing. Like, genuinely now, I would have played league or championship on every line of the field in every position, bar full-back and goalkeeper, right?
So you didn't play on every line?
I played on every line, haven't played in every position. Ah, Stevie, don't get smart with me here, buddy. So playing on every line in the field. Now, I really enjoyed it because it's a challenge and no player's going to say, do you know what it is? Like a little holiday, like, let's try this out and see how good I am. Some positions I played well in, others I didn't. But you never nail down, you know, the flip side of that. And no player would ever say, I don't want to play there, because your competitive instinct will go, I think I can do a job there. You know what I mean? I can move up there, I can play full forward, I could play in the corner. And you're challenging yourself to see, can you do that? So you'll never say no to something like that. But at the same time, it definitely affects your form, and it definitely affects how you, like, you just have one, when you move into a new position, you have to analyse this in your head. Like, and it takes a while to analyse, how is this position going to work for me? Can I be a Brian Doerr wing forward? Try that. No, I don't like it. Too hard. It's not my game. Can I be a Graham Geraghty wing forward where I'm trying to attack all the time? Yeah, I like that. Can I use bit of both? Can I go in for breaks like Paul Galvin? I'm not really good at that. It takes ages to figure out how to actually make that position your own.
Yeah.
So constantly being moved around, I genuinely think it's not helpful for a player.
Moving a player around is only for versatile players. We spoke about Joe McMahon a few weeks ago. He was one player that you could play in any position, from full back, corner back, all the way up to corner forward. We were lucky with Tony McEntee. We had him as well, and Tony McEntee could be laying out at number 2 or number 3 one week and then being your partner in the full forward line the following week. There's very, very few versatile players that you can actually trust to throw in anywhere. For a player like Lee Keegan, you know, you play him in his best position week in, week out, and keep him there, and that's it. You know, because it does mess with a player's head. A player doesn't realise or understand whether he's coming or going, and he doesn't really fully understand the role that is being expected of him from the manager as well in that particular role, because he hasn't been playing in it often enough. So, you know, I would be of the opinion, you know, try to get a settled team as quick and as fast as possible, and certainly when you've got the footballer of the year, you don't drag him all over the place and start messing with his head.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Right, lads, we'll do predictions here before we go, and we'll keep these short because we're going over time. So we'll go Meath Kildare. What are we thinking here? I'm going to start off and I'm going to go for Kildare. I've kind of had my eye on them all year and I think they're moving really well, and Leash are by no means a bad team after coming off a good win against Longford and they blew them away. So for those reasons, I will go for Kildare.
Kildare for me.
Meath for me.
Right, okay, you're going against the grain there. Right, Westmeath and Offaly, by all accounts, lads, this was an absolute bore fest. So there are bore fests in Leinster
The Westmeath Twitter account came out and said it, didn't it?
Yeah, it was 10-all in the end, lads. So 10-all, that's even worse than Tyrone Donegal in last year's Ulster final. And it would have been a much higher quality of player in that Ulster final. So I'm going Westmeath. I think the underdog usually gets a chance once off.
Westmeath for me as well.
Yep.
Roscommon, Leitrim. I'm going Roscommon. I think we probably all agree with that. They're at home. And
Roscommon
they're just,
too, yeah.
Then Tyrone Donegal. Jeez, lads, I'm going to let you go first here because I can't. Like, this is one that I just genuinely have no inkling in my head who's going to win this.
It's certainly one. This one's going to be one on the sideline. There's no doubt about it. It's one of those tight games that you don't know what way it's going to sway. For me, I'm sticking with my guns. I'm going to stick with Tyrone. I've tipped them from the start of the season to win Ulster, and for that reason alone, that's the only reason I'm going with them. You know, Conan was trying to persuade me, and in a way he was persuading me earlier on, talking about how Donegal have these shooters from long distance and all, and maybe I was thinking about that, maybe the do was right, but no, I'm sticking with Tyrone.
Always back draws in the championship. Oh, you get them at 7-8-1, ridiculous odds, and they always come up at some stage. So I'm going for a draw. I was thinking about Donegal, yeah. I was convincing myself, but then I started thinking about Tyrone's team and thought, what the hell am I talking about? So go for a draw.
Yeah, boys, the safe bet here is Tyrone. Like, it really is, because we know what we're going to expect for them. And for those reasons, I'm going to go for Tyrone, because I think Donegal still have to prove with these new young lads that they can do it in the white heat of battle. And for those reasons, Tyrone are the safe bet, so I'm going to go for them. But I think the draw is a great call as well. Like, I mean, I was going to copy with the draw. Right, qualifiers, lads, quickly. Waterford, Derry.
The big one.
The big one. Down in Farher Field. We know how difficult Farher Field is. It's another Ockram, lads. You don't get anything easy down in Farher Field.
I've played in it in Championship and we beat them, so I'm going to go with Derry.
Conan.
I wouldn't use Armagh as an example why Derry are going to win. I'm going with Derry, though, strangely enough. No reason for it.
I'm going to go for Waterford here, boys, because I think Derry are in absolute shambles. And for, like, it's the whole length of the country to have to travel as well. I don't think that doesn't make any difference, because it does, because you're not used to doing that kind of thing. Derry might come down the night before. It'll be a weird kind of feeling about it. Farher Field's a difficult place. Waterford are on the up. I'm going to give Waterford a chance here. Go for that. Loud versus Longford. Another toss up here, lads. This was a really close game in the league, and this was one actually that was blown up a little bit early. Do you remember Longford felt aggrieved that they had the wind and they had it back to a pint, and the ref blew it up early? So this is a toss up. So I'm going to go for Longford here to avenge that league loss.
Loud.
Yeah, this one for me is close as well, and I can see draw written all over it. But I'm going to go with Louth. Drogheda is a tough place to go. It's a really tight, compact pitch, and I just think with that there, they have the advantage.
Okay, Wicklow Leash, lads. I think we'll all agree that's Leash, although you wouldn't know with the two of you.
Leash, no, I go with Leash for sure, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, right. Sligo Antrim then, lads. I'll go Sligo. Markovic Park is a difficult place to go. Not the same difficult place to go as Farher Field, because Markovic Park is like pristine and a really nice kind of ground. It's not, but it's still, I know from Leash's perspective, we never got too much out of that place when we went over there in the league or whatever. So I'll go for Sligo in that one.
I'll agree with you.
Me too.
Full house for Sligo. Right, listen, you've heard it there from our two experts and myself. So we will see you on Monday, where we'll have a review show, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.